You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Yo, yo, yo. It's me again. Hi. Soundtracking is back once again. We can't keep away. We are just... we're slightly self-combusting, to be honest, with the amount of guests we've had, but we love it. We love sharing the conversations with you. We love enthusing about the creativity and the craft and the beauty that goes into film and music and that relationship. So here we are once again. We've got yet another bonus episode for you. And this time we're celebrating the release of Noah Baumbach's comedy, J. Kelly. It's not kind of straightforward comedy. It's kind of in that vein of Noah Baumbach where it's dramatic comedy. It's really fulfilling as well. First up is Noah himself, then leading men, George Clooney and Adam Sandler. I know, crazy. So J. Kelly tells the story of this huge movie star and his devoted manager, Ron, played by George and Adam. They embark on this unexpectedly profound journey through Europe. And along the way, both men confront the choices they've made, relationships with loved ones, and the legacies they leave behind. There's a whole thing about everybody going, oh, it's just George Clooney playing George Clooney. It's not. He's obviously embracing elements of the world that he's inhabited. But this is a character who is obviously in a world that George Clooney is in, but none of the experiences or what the character's going through are what George is going through. He's in a very different place than this character is. But that's not to say that he's not pulled on experiences and people that he has witnessed along the way. This is a really lovely film. This is a really kind of beautiful exploration into what was, what could have been, relationships, things you've missed out on, missing a moment, male friendship. There's just so many things that this film throws up. And one of the things that it does throw up is the brilliant Adam Sandler in another dramatic role. I love him in Punch Drunk Love. I love him in his comedies as well. Big Daddy, one of my all-time favourites, so much so that when I went to New York for one of the first times, I visited loads of places that featured in the film. Maybe that's where being the scene started from. I don't know. But it's great to see him in a role like this. And George is just, he's like a classic movie star. He's old school Hollywood in a contemporary world. And I love watching him on screen. J. Kelly scored by a very good friend of the show, Nicholas Britell, who has delivered an outstanding score. So we're going to begin with his piano and string version of the J. Kelly theme.
Thank you. So great to see you. I was listening back to the last time we spoke, which was 2019.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Marriage Story.
Wow.
Yeah, so a while ago.
Yeah.
J. Kelly's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So good. I want to get straight in and talk about music because Nicholas Britell, who's just a first and foremost a wonderful human being, but yes. but so talented and so versatile and embeds himself so deeply in character and story. And I wondered what it was about his work that you felt he was the right man to collaborate with for J. Kelly.
Yeah, I've loved his music and his scores, but it was kind of instinctual too. I was thinking, I knew that I wanted it to have, the movie to have a kind of, I don't know how else to say this, but like a movie score. Like I wanted it to have like, I don't know if you call it more traditional or what, but I wanted it to be orchestral and I wanted it to have melody and I was really sort of thinking like, who could do that, you know? And
yeah.
And I just reached out to him and we met and we just had such a great first meeting. And it was one of those like great, like where you meet someone, you're like, oh, like I know this guy, even though you don't know them. And so we talked about lots about music and music and movies. And then I gave him the script probably a little bit after that. And he, maybe a month or two after that, said, you want to come up to my studio? And I have some ideas. And he had written three things that all ended up in the movie. I mean, including that sort of J. Kelly waltz, which is sort of the like one of the main things. Yeah, that was, and he came on set and was, he played, we had a lot of the music there for the cast, you know.
Oh, nice.
And he came and he played and it was great. It was great. He was like part of the crew in that way, you know. And then, you know, after and post, so much developed after that further, but it was lovely. It was like, I've worked that way with Randy Newman and I've worked, you know, where, but it's great to have the composer
embedded early. In the project. Yeah.
Because in a way they get to like almost show you your future. It's like when you're, you know, you're in the script stage and you've got, it's all kind of conceptual in some way. Mm. And then you've got suddenly a melody or something and you're like, oh yeah, that's the movie I'm going to make is going to have that score.
Yeah. I love the idea of you having like a kind of, you know, a live composer on set as well. It's like, play for me, Nicholas.
Yes. Nicholas, maybe how does this scene sound?
But it is a really interesting concept. I was thinking about it, you know, that you have that scene with George, J. Kelly, where he's with talking in the mirror. And even from the movie stars that he mentions in that scene sort of thing, that in itself, I feel, leans into the kind of score that the film warrants in a way, you know, those kind of like the classic kind of Hollywood type thing of it, because there's a real side of J. Kelly that fits that, I think, in a way, for sure.
Yeah. And what we developed, or what Nick, he was in the editing room at some point in post, and we were talking about the memories, you know, and that being one scene where we go into a memory, and he just sort of said, well, what if, because we had this sort of the waltz, which was kind of the J. Kelly theme. And he said, well, what would that sound like backward? And because we were talking about it's sort of a shadow, the shadow self was sort of a thing we talked a lot about. And first he just ran it backward, like actually just like on the computer backward. And it was sort of had this odd quality to it. And then he started to play it backward. We had a piano because I was editing just outside this cottage outside our home here, actually. And we have a piano, so we went into the piano, and he actually started to play it backward, and it was quite beautiful backward.
Wow.
And so that became sort of another element of the score.
Thank you.
That's so interesting, because that idea of almost kind of like the way that Jay sees himself, the way that other people see him, his perceived reality, but the actual reality. It's so clever that the way the kind of score leans into that in a way as well, the kind of different versions that people have of this character.
Yeah, it's a sort of a variation on that also is in the opening, which I hadn't necessarily thought of using score, because there's so much kind of dialogue. I thought, well, that's kind of the score. But the opening shot, when we first go into the movie, it was Nick who had the idea of like, well, what if in some sense the orchestra is learning how to play the score at the same time that the movie crew is kind of, you know, assembling around to figure out how we're going to do this shot. And so that's in there, is this sort of like, it's like forming itself, you know, which again is another sort of sense of identity. And in those memories, in the J. Kelly one too, in addition to the sort of reverse shadow theme, there is also, we bring back that sort of various instruments kind of tuning, finding themselves in a way, which again was, that's all Nick. You know, I thought it was a great idea.
I love the sound of an orchestra kind of preparing before a performance. Yeah. There's something really, you know, when you're sat in your seat at the theater, whether it's, you know, I don't know, a ballet or whatever the performance, that kind of, you know, the conductor comes in, they're all sort of just checking. I love that sound. There's something really incredible about it.
Well, it's also like, in addition to the sort of maybe more thematic elements I was pointing out, there is something kind of showbizzy about it too, like performance about it, you know, like about... You know,
warming up.
Exactly. Yeah,
doing your squats before you head
exactly. Yeah, it's rehearsing. It's like finding yourself. It's like finding the performance.
Because there's a not a road trip element to it, but the journey element to the film as well. You know, I love those scenes on the train. It's that in itself could be another movie in a way. Do you know what I mean? Just that section. It's so wonderful. You know, this journey to. This beautiful part of Europe. And I wondered whether if you had any conversations with Nicholas specifically about either leaning into those two elements in terms of, you know, where he's going to, you know, this film festival in Italy and the journey that he takes there and that kind of train journey and what that could sound like and what you wanted it to sound like or whether you wanted to pull back from that or not.
Well, I think, what's kind of inherent in the storytelling is that there's a kind of very American thing going on and a very European thing going on at the same time. And they're kind of like, where do those things intersect? Yeah. What is that? And I think Nick inherently brought that to the score. There's something both sort of classically, you know, that reminds us of a lot of the sort of European composers we love and or calls to mind, I should say. And then, but also then has this sort of American, you know, sound to it as well. So I think in some ways it's probably both of our kind of natural approach to things.
Yeah.
In specific, I mean, like when Jay is first on the train and he sees people before they see him, there's sort of a moment, you know, thing where he's sort of seeing people sort of in their own worlds and their own element. And it's like for a moment he's anonymous. And Nick had sort of developed this sort of beautiful piano thing, which he did, I'll talk about the felt piano in a second after this, but he had sort of developed that, and I thought, oh well, that was really lovely for that moment. Again, I hadn't anticipated music later, but when Jay starts to engage with everybody and ask them where they're from and what they do, and then what he did is he brought that back in a more orchestral way. And I really loved it because it was yeah, it was like an expression of joy in a way, you know, both for them and for Jay.
Yeah.
And sort of on one is maybe this more isolated, you know, watching from a distance, and then the other is this engagement.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the music represents that. And again, Nick is so smart about it. I mean, it's like those things, like you sometimes talk about those things more specifically, and then sometimes it's like that's just the approach,
because
the approach is taking those things into account on some unconscious level.
I think what's so brilliant about music and film in particular is it's almost like it can sometimes be your guide into a deeper understanding sometimes of character and narrative and the layers of a film sometimes, because I love when, you know, it's the perfect cinema where you go in and you can just be purely entertained, but then you can choose whether you want to go deeper into it and find, you know, I think this film is a great example of that, in terms of there is so much that's being kind of said behind us just sitting and really thoroughly enjoying this film and these characters and this story. And music is a great kind of almost guide to that, I think, sometimes as well.
Yeah, I think I love something we did talk about. It's where music sometimes is almost a reaction. It's like from the film itself.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's sometimes music sort of feels like, you know, it's coming out of character or it's coming out of a moment. But sometimes I like, which is a kind of, I think, probably more European thing. I think of Truffaut's movies with Delarue that have these, where the music almost just seems to like come on. Like, it's not.
I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's like something. Yeah, it's like somebody waiting to interrupt or just join the conversation in some way. And I always like that. I think about that a lot when we mix the movies too. Like, it's, you know, sometimes I'll say like, no, I think you don't need to sneak it in. Like, let
you don't
it
need
just
to fade in.
Yeah. Just let it come on in a way. And well, we could wait. I was going to talk about the felt piano because I sort of touched on it. But
yeah, go on.
Because all the piano sort of throughout the movie is done on this felt piano, which is, you know, it literally has felt that sort of dulls the sound. And so by design, again, it was just a sound we liked and it was a sound that felt right for it. As we were developing the score, then you start to sort of intellectualize things and you're saying, well, I suppose there is sort of this feeling that something's being held back, like there's something not fully accessed. Like it's so at the end of the movie when we go into the final memory with the daughters performing for him. And then, then when we come out of it to Jay watching, you know, his past in the theater, he switches to a grand piano. And there is some, again, it's like something you wouldn't, you know, no one would know, but that you might feel on an unconscious level. Yeah. It's like that there's some sort of release. There's something breakthrough in some way.
Yeah.
And
he's learning something.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that was a lovely thing again that Nick developed.
Yeah. just off music for us, the casting in this is just so fantastic. And am I right in saying that you and Emily wrote it with George in mind for this particular role?
Well, we wrote the character first, and we wrote essentially a draft before we kind of wanted to get too specific.
Yeah.
But at the point that we started to think of an actor, we thought of George,
And Adam?
Adam even earlier, because Adam I'd worked with before, and I felt like Ron was a way to write something quite close to Adam, like to the person I now know very well. It's a thing. It's like, it's different when you, for me, when I, sometimes I'm writing toward an actor. It's like I'm someone maybe I haven't worked with, but I want to work with.
Yeah.
And then other times, if it's somebody I've worked with, you know, in the case of this movie, Adam or Laura.
She's so great. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Who I already have had an experience. Mm. I've had a thing. And now I also have a closeness to them as people. So it influences both in ways I'm conscious of and not conscious of how I write for them. But that's nice, because it's like your continuing story that the two of you are telling together.
Yeah. And Billy Crudup as well, that kind of the physical performance of that character, the kind of slight twitchiness, the perpetual motion of that is just such a, the suspense almost element of that character as to where it's going to go is really brilliant. It's really great.
Yeah, Billy, I loved working with Billy. Billy's somebody I've wanted to work with. That's more one of those ones where it's like, oh, Billy Crudup should play this. And I've met him, but I've never worked with him. So it was, you know, that was a thrill to like both bring it to him and then see what he did.
It's clear just in your films, like how important music is, both in terms of the kind of, you know, working with composers in a kind of conventional way, but then also the needle drops that you've used, you know, over your career. And I just wanted to mention one in particular, Modern Love. You know, that the kind of, I love that why things happen for a reason. And, you know, the fact that you had that track in your film, that then this amazing French artist, Zahos de Sagazan, performed it in Cannes in front of Greta a couple of years ago.
Right. Yeah.
And then I completely was enamored by this performer, went to see her live and stuff. And I just love that kind of passing things on from people as well. And the fact that she would never have performed that had you not had that in that film and stuff. And it's lovely the journey that things can take and the way that music through different art forms can lead you to different things.
Yeah, it's that thing with needle drops too, where like why and when they work, you know, and or, you know, ones that are become kind of associated with the moments that they're in the movies, because they're, you know, particularly if you use a song that's well known, you know, or songs that have been used previously get used again, you know, it is interesting that way. Because I've actually, the last few movies, not for like a particularly, like I don't have a good reason for it, but I've kind of have been really exploring like having score as like the, really the voice of the movie, and the needle drops are more incidental, like, you know, just their atmosphere and in places that we're in. But yeah, for a while I was, a lot of the music in my movies was sort of existing.
Good choices.
Songs. thanks. Yeah. I mean, I love music and I love, so it's always, it felt natural to me to bring in, because it's another sort of like, you know, it's both like character and sometimes it's the taste of the character. Mm-hmm. They're playing a song that might associate with the character. And other times it's something that's just like something I've lived with that feels right for this moment. It's more like collage, I guess, in that way. But yeah, it's something I was sort of thinking about, like, I wonder if, I mean, for what I'm writing next, I don't know. It's nice. It's nice when a song kind of announces itself.
It's so lovely chatting to you. Really, thank you for letting me pick your brain about your relationship with music, particularly with Jay Kelly, which is absolutely wonderful. Thanks for your time, Noah.
James, thank you. Thanks.
From the score to J. Kelly, that's Run's theme by Nicholas Britell, rounding off the first part of Soundtracking with Noah Baumbach.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
And so to George Clooney and Adam Sandler. Now, before we get into that highly entertaining chat, they were on such good form. And there were times in this conversation where I felt like I was slightly having an out-of-body experience going, what am I doing here? And also felt like slightly cheeky in that I felt like I'd kind of interrupted a couple of mates having a chat. But you can also watch it on our socials at Soundtracking UK, and we will stick it up on our YouTube channel as well. But before we get to it, let's have some more of Nicholas's brilliant music and score from the film. This is Joie de Vivre, Felt Piano. Okay, I know your time is so precious.
Oh, it's so precious.
Yes. So precious, the pair of you.
First of all, Adam's got a lot of time. I just want you to know, he's got a lot of time.
Well, I've talked to you a lot about music.
Yeah.
As a filmmaker. Yeah, as a filmmaker,
yeah,
you know.
Talk about music.
He plays music. He sings music.
I know.
He's an actual musician.
Oh, yeah, man. I know.
Grow old with you.
Grow old with you. Sure,
I mean,
man.
You know.
Fantastic. That's a G major seventh I start with.
You see what I do?
But on J. Kelly, I heard that Nicholas Britell came and he would play some music on set sometimes.
He did for the last scene.
Do you remember?
Yes.
Oh, did he for that scene?
For the biggie. That was live.
Yeah, it was live.
Did that help?
Amazing. Yes.
Everything helps. At my age, you know.
Because that score is so...
That's the warm...
It's one of the prettiest scores I've ever heard. It really reminded me of Cinema Paradiso and that kind of vibe, you know.
Absolutely. And Getcha, and even to the very end of the credits.
Even when it says the end at the very end, it's got that little flourish.
Well, that was like last night when we did the Q&A and I went up on stage and I just said, can we have a round of applause for Nicholas Britell's score? Because it really does kind of... stay with you as a thing. Do either of you use music or have music around as a, I don't know, a tool or as a kind of like?
It's part of his whole act is music. He sings songs.
Oh, well, that's true. I mean, I do when I do stand up, I use a lot of music.
Yeah. I know you play the guitar. Can you play other instruments? Can you play the piano?
Little tiny piano, a little bit of drums where I can keep a beat kind of stuff. And if a drummer is sick for a song, I can. Maybe sit in there for a tune, and then the drummer goes, let me get the sticks back, man.
Oh, yeah. He takes it away from
you. Exactly. Yeah.
But do you use it for performance at all?
I have, yes. I can get in a mindset.
He has these beautiful songs. You see, the one about all the comedians, that song.
Oh, yes, thank you. Maybe you should listen to it sometime. We'll all sit together.
It's a beautiful, like, that. And you do it in.
I close my shows out with that song.
So thank you, Abbott and Costello, and Leno on Letterman. Thank you, Ruth Buzzy Sparklebook, and every stream from Kinnison. Spinal Tap for going to 11. Thank you, Three Stooges and Jerry Lewis. You made me happy since I was 7. Thank you, Marx Brothers and Gleason on the bus. Thanks to Benny Hill for smacking the old ball cap for us. Thank you, Carol Burnett, George Carlin, and SCTV2. Eddie Murphy, my whole fucking neighborhood wanted to be you.
Talking like, do I use songs to get me
in the mood?
In the mood,
yeah.
You do that ever? If you have a heavy scene,
boom, pa ka pa ka.
He wants to get in the right mood.
He's straight into David Holmes.
I just play porn music.
He does. That's between setups, Clooney in front of the trailer. Sandman, come over for a minute. Not Sandman, but Adam.
Not Sandman. I don't let anybody call him Sandman.
And that's over.
Is that just, oh,
I
not
just,
anymore,
I just said
ever?
Stop. It's time to grow up, man. You're not Sandman anymore.
Yeah, he wants me to get older. And I agree.
This film, if anything, is kind of.
You see the gray in the beard?
There is a few dots of it.
Silver fox is the best way to say it.
Is that how you want to say it?
Yeah, totally.
Clunes looks extra cool today with your hair. You know, good haircut.
Do you know I got a haircut today? And I'm glad you noticed. I feel better about myself.
You should. It's like doing something cool.
And they shortened my eyebrows.
Ooh, now we're getting deep.
Starting to get super long.
No, but even his eyebrows are nice to me. Mid-take one time, one of George's eyebrows tapped me and goes, "Keep going, man. You got this."
How well did you guys know each other before J. Kelly?
Pretty well.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we didn't travel together. You came to Como.
Yes, true. That's when I really started.
Well, that's when you know him well. You get the invite to Como.
He was shooting a movie in Como with Jen Aniston.
Yes.
And I said, well, come over to the house.
Hopped on a boat and went to George's, and George and Amal made some of the best pizza I've ever had in my life.
Well, it was nice, too, because his wife, Jackie, very elegant, wore this beautiful, elegant thing. And Jen Aniston showed up in a beautiful sundress. And
yes.
Adam dressed up in his super long, cool shorts.
Elegant shorts.
Very elegant
Don't
shorts.
Don't do that to me.
Oh, they were elegant.
Peach color, I believe.
They were peach color with the aqua tennis shoes.
Yep.
Just like simply watching you guys here and also kind of watching you on screen in the film, though, there's this kind of... I think I said it to you, George, this kind of, you know, those kind of double acts, those duos that we've watched through the history of cinema that have just been amazing to watch, whether it be...
Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. Very similar.
Maybe, maybe. But I was thinking like some like It Hot and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? You know,
well,
the odd couple, all that kind of stuff.
There was the odd couple.
There's a chemistry. There's something really genuine between the two.
I have an actual genuine love and affection for this man. Same. And he has a extreme, I can't tell you what a gift he is to work with as an actor, because he's such a beautiful actor. So on top of him being a friend and somebody who I love and care about, it's also really fun to work with him. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you can really be friends with somebody and then you start working with them and go, uh-oh.
Yep. That has happened. You know, that has happened.
Yeah, we've done that before.
I click with George. I love George. I don't know. It feels almost like older brother guy.
Yes,
that
he's
I'll
the
sit
older
and,
brother.
He's much older brother that I sit and listen to. No, he's a tiny bit older.
Much older.
But I love.
Wait, how old are you? Do you tell people?
5'9".
Are you really?
59 with
so
bags 60 under my
coming,
eyes.
Baby.
60's
wow.
coming. What are you doing for me on the 60? A Meldman property?
Big party in Como.
I'll do something nice for you.
We're going to go to
pizza at Como again. There you go.
Pizza at Como, yes.
When do you turn 60? How long?
September 9th, I'll be 60 years old. It's going to be a horrible day for all men.
Oh, no. Come on. It's just another. It's turning the page. It's another chapter.
It's not bugging me, but it'll bug many people.
It'll bug you.
It'll bug me, I know.
Dude, I know it'll bug you.
I'm going to drop 20 for it.
20 years?
Yeah, I'm going to drop 20 years for that one.
I have to say, 60 was the only, that was the first age that
rattled
caught me in the throat.
Yeah.
Because 50 didn't bug me, 50 for none of that bug me. And then it's like 60, you go, Because, you know, whenever you say 50, somehow you still can eke out the word middle-aged.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah,
there's
yeah.
still, there's about 120-year-old people. I could do it.
Yeah, you were talking about the guy last night who's 101. He was still writing for Netflix
Norman
when he's 100.
Lear,
yeah.
Norman, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
But once you hit 60, there's not a lot of 100 and like, you know, like 35-year-olds.
Right.
There's still time. Science and technology is still there. Yeah, to, do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Science.
Oh, yeah. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Frozen, I'm freezing something.
Yes, I'm going to freeze half of myself.
Whilst I have you, I just want a quick second to Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah.
I just think it's a lovely time in the world where we get the chance to see films back in the cinema that we haven't seen in the cinema for a while. And that's a wonderful thing, I think, that came out of COVID is that as well as new releases going into the cinema, because there was that kind of chunk where there were no new films to show, they went back and showed historical titles. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. Punch Drunk Love is one that I saw in the cinema in the last 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And it was so joyful to see that
nice
film.
Nice score in that one.
Beautiful score, yeah, but also your performance.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
do you remember about that film?
I remember loving Paul and listening to Paul and just wearing a blue suit, and
you look very handsome.
I look good. That was for the times. You the blue suit was
you
good.
You got rid of the mullet for that too. You
there
were
was
really
no
good.
Mullet. That, I started with the mullet, and then we did some reshoots and took the mullet away.
Digitally took the mullet.
Did you? Back then,
no, he was so good.
It's a special film, that Adam.
It was a good one, and I'm proud to be in it. And old PTA's at it again, crushing it. Did you see their new PTA, George?
I haven't seen it yet.
Me neither.
It was very good. Was that your first sort of big, serious film?
Yes. It was.
Because that's what I thought. I remember it being.
I got the phone call from Tom Cruise. Hey, I'm making a movie right now with this director who likes you. I said, oh, that's awesome. He goes, you mind if I put him on? I think he wants to do something with you. I said, sure. And then Paul gets on and goes and started talking about started being Paul and just said, I'm writing a script for you. Is that okay? I said, sure, man. Well, you know, like I had no idea what was coming. Right. I don't think I saw Boogie Nights yet. I didn't see much. And I was
so you weren't even all that jumping around.
I was like, Cruise's buddy called me. That's nice. he gave me that juicy one.
Was it a different experience for you?
Sure. At the time, yes, it was brand new feeling. I only did my comedies, but I was excited. I knew it would be fun to be a different type of dude, and I just followed Paul, and I was excited that he thought of me in this way, and I just tried to do the best I can. But that guy's incredible. He's just a nice human being to hang around with, and has this vision the whole time, and you just try to not let the guy down.
It's like Noah, in a way, you know, in terms of how specific he's been about you guys with this film and the roles, and how specific the things within this film
very
are
similar
as well.
In, you know, from around about the same time.
Yeah.
You know? How about you with the Coen brothers? Same kind of thing? What was that like? What was the first Coen brothers movie?
Isn't he singing great?
What?
Oh, brother.
It was?
And, I mean, I couldn't believe my luck, because you know, they had a track record at that point, you know, and they'd... I think Fargo had just come out,
right?
And then they sent me this script, and I was like, I couldn't believe my luck.
Yeah,
and, you know, I've done, I think, 5 films with them since then. It's fun to, like, work with people that you know. All you have to do is just show up and do and say their lines and do what they want you to do.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big advantage. It's exciting.
When you're writing as well, another music question, do you have music around? Do you play music when you're writing, or can you not because it's...
No, I like distractions. I don't know how you... When I'm writing a screenplay, I actually don't mind, like, the TV on or music playing.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
It doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I find it to be kind of helpful in a way. So
me too.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Takes away that silence that I hate.
The uncomfortable silence. Two last questions, because one of the beautiful things about G. Kelly is the locations and how we are taken into those, you know, the train journey into this kind of, we're on the journey with him, basically, into these these places. How important is that element of it in terms of being in kind of real situations and real environments to feed into kind of your performance and the emotion and the relationships that you're having with people on screen?
A month and a half or so.
Yeah.
Like the train stuff we shot on the soundstage here.
Yeah.
But it felt like we were in Italy every time you went onto the soundstage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, really yeah.
I mean, I think there's no actor that would tell you there's certain things that help you, right?
Yeah.
We rehearsed for a while. That's nice to do. But nothing really fits until you get into your wardrobe the first time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you're mm-hmm. like, oh. And you kind of adopt that character. And then when you get on a location, it changes how you approach the part and approach the thing, I think, in a way. It's fun when you're not writing and producing and directing like you and yes. I were talking about. It's fun when you can just hand over everything to somebody else and show up.
To Noah. Yeah. Noah, it was all his thoughts, all his, I mean, it's great. We get to try stuff, get to do,
yeah.
Try to, you know, there's discussions. But then ultimately you just say, let's see what the man wants us to do.
Have you noticed that all the things we tried were cut out?
They didn't make it. No. But imagine if some of them made it. How
they were the DVD extras.
No, but he really, he's exactly what a director should do, which is like, great idea. Oh, George, yeah, that's such a good. Remember, like I jump up in the air and the suitcase hits you in the legs?
Oh, we had that,
that's not
yes.
in the movie.
That's, but we did about 13 takes again.
Yeah, of you getting thumped with a,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. So all of our ideas, just gone.
You know, you mentioned the last scene. Where was that shot?
In Arezzo.
Yes,
in
yes.
the town of Arezzo.
In a nice theater.
In a cool little theater, and it was just beautiful. We walked in, and it was like, I mean, we knew, Adam and I both knew, we'd sort of put a pin in that day of shooting. We knew that that was a, you know, if you're going to end the film, because there were different endings. You know, there was a musical number
wow.
that I had to learn, like singing.
Singing.
Yes, yeah, that yes. Mark Ronson wrote the song.
That's
for
right.
It.
No way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to learn the music for it.
Yeah.
And then I got, and thank God he cut it because, you know.
Dancing and stuff as well, like a big old music.
Dancing and singing. And
are we talking tap? Are we talking
no, not
jazz?
Tap dance. Take it easy. Come on.
He doesn't do tap.
I'm very, very. I'm mostly a soft shoe.
He always does
give
the old soft shoe.
I do the old soft shoe because yeah. my shoes are old.
The
and soft.
New soft shoe, he.
I turn my hand. I just say no to it.
Oh, my God. I wish we could see that.
We didn't shoot it, thank God. So there was a lot of discussions about how we would end this. And the idea of having to end it with giving a damn about these characters. Somehow had to, we knew we had to land that scene, the last scene. Mm. And so there was a, you know, Adam and I talked about a lot, like, it's coming. Right. And we knew it was coming. Yeah. And we were helped by the everything else in that theater with all the other yeah. actors there yeah. and the, you know, and the film showing and everything. But it was that thing, you know, where we both looked at each other like, oh, well, now we have to hit this one or it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Boy, does it work.
Yeah, it worked.
Boy, does it work. Yeah.
Thank you. That was a George day. I liked it.
Well, that was both of us.
See, there he goes again. He can't take it, can he?
No, he
can't
take
the compliments. I don't need it. He
doesn't want it.
I have the luckiest life in the world. I get to work with people like Adam and Noah and wonderful actors.
So we did good together, but I did enjoy George that day. Yes.
Well, listen, I hope this is the first of a number of projects you guys work on together because
yes.
it really is.
He's
wonderful.
Invited me to be in the next golf movie.
I mean, he can be in Happy Gilmore, not third, number four.
Oh wow! Okay.
And
yeah, he's
harsh.
Skipping me off of third.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's already written third, and it's you know Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise. So,
Pitt and Cruise said yes.
Yeah.
Is this the thank you for Cruise giving you that phone call way
it was,
back?
Yeah. Right. Punch drunk return. Yeah. Phone call, get favor call. But George is in number four, and yeah, I think he's going to be.
But you're not in four.
I'm not. No, we.
It's just me.
Yeah, but he starts in a pro shop. He's handing out teas to everybody. It's going to be fun.
Listen, thank you. It's just a treat to be in your company.
You.
Yeah, and thanks congratulations on Jay Kelly. Yeah, it's a really special
thank
film.
You, yes.
Thanks,
and
guys.
It's always fun to see you.
Yeah, oh, good to see
bless
you.
Bless you. Thank you so much.
The audience loved you last night, Edith.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, they
thanks.
Did. They did.
Thank you.
From the Score to Jay Kelly, that's Ray and Ron rounding off this bumper bonus edition of Soundtracking with Noah Baumbach, George Clooney and Adam Sandler. And don't ever let it be said that we don't bring you the good stuff. And I got to chat to him about Punch Drunk Love. Yes. My huge thanks to these three fine gentlemen for taking the time to talk to us, and also all the team behind the scenes at Netflix and DDA for facilitating that. Huge appreciation. Jay Kelly is on general release in the UK now. I've spoken to George, Noah, and his equally gifted and brilliant wife, Greta Gerwig, on the podcast before, and you can find all of those chats over at edithbowman.com, along with every single other episode of this podcast, of which there are over 500. Nicholas Britell's appeared several times too, and always fabulous company. I love chatting to him. Hopefully we can try and get him back on in the new year. Please do follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK, and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well, Soundtracking Extra. Next up, it's the gorgeous Kate Winslet, her son Joe, the composer and the music supervisor, to discuss the film Goodbye June, which is Kate's directorial debut. These guys were such great company. It's a beautiful chat about everybody having firsts on this film. So join me next time for a wonderful celebration about Goodbye June. Kate Winslet, director, first-time director, love it, also stars in the film. The writer, Joe Anders. The music supervisor, who is James Taylor, not the musician, but another James Taylor, and composer Ben Harlan. Really lovely conversation about that film. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.